Hi, I'm Lorraine Salazar, and this is Everyday Heroes. Today, my guest is Lauren Ekstrom. She is a yoga teacher, meditation teacher, and author who, at 11 weeks pregnant, experienced the loss of her unborn child. She decided to share this publicly 8 months ago when it happened. She's expecting again at 6 months pregnant. Today, we'll be talking about that loss, grieving, and healing. So, why did you decide to share your story?
It's interesting. I think a lot of people have said, oh, it's so brave. And
it is very brave. I thought it was very brave.
Thank you. And the truth is, I think we have a real misconception of what brave means. And I understand in our culture how we can see something like that as being brave. But there are so many people in the world standing up for their rights and their children in ways that truly are brave, that put their lives at danger or put their lives in a state of risk. And speaking up about this, the only thing that could possibly hold me back from sharing it is the fear of opening myself up to vulnerability and therefore other people's sympathy. And allowing myself to receive that sympathy, which then causes me to feel more of what I'm feeling.
That's true.
And that's not a reason not to share. That's never been a reason. To protect myself is not reason enough to keep something private. And I think as teachers, as yoga teachers and meditation teachers who have a presence, say, on social media, and there's a certain perspective of what your life is. You're traveling the world and you're doing something that you love and on a path that is aligned with your deepest calling. There can be a misperception that life is perfect and that things don't go wrong for you and you have it all figured out. And there are missteps along the way for everybody and pain along the way for everybody. And it felt really important both to myself and to my husband to make sure to share with students and anyone who needs support through something like pregnancy loss, to be able to see this happens to everybody. Everybody experiences pain. Everybody experiences loss. No one is exempt. And that felt really important.
That is. And I love what you said about, you know, seemingly, you know, a healthy woman who's vibrant and beautiful, there's another side, and it's the side that things in life will still happen and there will still be things we have to go through no matter who we are.
And that was one of the first great teachings in terms of parenting and going on the journey into motherhood, which is that this is not in my control.
So and true.
Let me tell you, I tried to control it. Right. I spent the whole year before we started trying to get pregnant, reading all the books and charting my cycles and taking the prenatal vitamins and seeing the naturopath. And I'd cut alcohol out of my diet 2 years before that. And
really done, preparing.
Really preparing. I had done everything right. And then we lost the pregnancy. And that wasn't because we had done something wrong. It wasn't because we're bad people. It's not karma. Bad things happen. Hard things happen. Painful things happen. And I do think it's important on the one hand to give voice to. There's not always a reason for that, because I don't think that everybody feels soothed by that. I do believe that everything happens and we can learn and grow from it, whether there's a reason from it or not. And that was
part of our learning lesson. Absolutely. It's our lesson we need to get through for whatever reason.
And Hafiz has a famous saying, which is, people are sad because they've made a shrine to the past. And giving voice to it allowed it to be out there and acknowledge it and give reverence to what had happened and to hold the life that was lost, or the life that didn't find that it was actually wisest to come forward at this time, to honor it and then to move forward from it and to not let what happened in the past dictate or create some narrative or story that kept us in a place of pain and suffering.
Was it scary to share, to break through that vulnerable wall?
absolutely. Well, it was interesting because the day that we found out that we had experienced the loss, right afterwards, we left the hospital and we went to our favorite hike. And we needed to get out in nature and get some perspective, a bigger perspective, and be together and also feel what we were feeling, cry, all those things.
In a safe place.
Yeah.
That was a safe and big, beautiful place.
And right away, I looked at him. I was like, okay, you know, let's share. Let's find a time. We'll sit down. He has a podcast. So I said, okay, let's sit down. Let's talk about this. And he looked at me and he was like, no, this is not the time right now, because I go into a state of doing. And I think as women, we do this. It's like, okay, let me go right back to doing all the things that I do. And
fix. Let me try to fix this and pick up where I left off and it can be right.
And make it better and make it a teaching
make
lesson.
It happen.
And he was so good about holding space for this is a time for us to feel what we're feeling, to grieve, to go through everything that we need to go through, to take some time off. Mm-hmm. And then we can circle back to this conversation.
That's so true. It's like what I've heard before, being okay, being in an uncomfortable state. Like, you're not really okay, but like, I maybe need to be here for a while because it's essential and necessary for me to sit with this, sit with these feelings.
And not to have to play the role that we're so used to playing in the world. You know, it's easy to fall back into the role of teacher or wanting to help other people when we're really in a time where actually what we need is to be students of life in this moment. What I needed to be was a student of my own heart and my own body and my own life.
Yes.
And I needed to also receive support and help in return, which I think, again, for women is not always an easy place to be. You know,
it's not always accessible and it's not always, it doesn't always even feel realistic in our paradigm of what we can give ourselves.
We're so used to being the caregivers.
Givers and nurturers, and it can be hard to know when to put that back into you and how can you put it back into
you. And to allow people to give that to you. And that was the big thing about eventually then when we did share was allowing people to say, I'm sorry. And allowing myself to hear that and my heart to hear that and then hearing other people's stories and really allowing myself to receive their grief.
I think you got hundreds of responses when you posted that, right? I mean, there's hundreds. And that right there shows you are definitely not alone.
Absolutely. And that was...
And neither are they.
Right. And that's what was so powerful on the one hand. But I think as a woman, in some way, I knew that. I know that I'm not alone in this. My mother had had a loss before she'd had my sister. My sister's almost a decade younger than I am. And she had had a loss at much later. I think she was 20 weeks.
Wow.
And so I knew in that way that I wasn't alone. But what was powerful then was to actually see Travis go and read the comments, especially on my post, and to see the things that people shared. And it moved him because people were personal with their shares. And some of them, all of them are hard, but some of them incredibly painful or multiple losses. Mm-hmm. And I just remember coming home and he was sitting on the couch and you could feel the emotion radiating off him where he kind of looked at me and was like, I had no idea. And yes. that was emotional and powerful.
Right. And I think your share gave other people permission to share what they were feeling. And you bring up such a great point with the husband or the male in your life, that like if there's not a reference point and if they're going through this with their partner, it can feel like left field. Like, what? This happens and how do we get through this? Mm-hmm. And that he was able to read these and feel comfort and overwhelmed.
And we forget it. You know, we as women, we're carrying, as pregnant people, we're carrying life in our bodies and it's so personal and we feel sick or we feel energized or we feel movement, all the growth and the change in our bodies. I mean, the change in our bodies, they reference it like in adolescence, you have several years to go through puberty.
Right.
But you only have 9-10 months to go through all the hormonal changes you go through into motherhood and then growing another human being. And I think in terms of pregnancy loss, it's a place where the partner can sometimes get lost. And we have to hold their grief and space for them as well in their processing.
So what happened? What did you experience with your loss?
So I was about 10 weeks and I had been feeling okay. Tired, nauseated, hungry all the time.
When did you find out you were expecting?
Right away.
Okay. It was really quick because you knew you had been preparing your body and doing all the right things and getting things ready.
So we'd been trying, and on the third month, we got pregnant. And so we told my family on Christmas Day. And
oh, how special.
It was so early. And but we just felt excited and I wanted to share and it felt like a special time. And so we had kept it quite intimate, but we had told very close family and friends. And about 10 weeks in, suddenly all of my symptoms went away. I was still feeling good up until then, but it was all of a sudden, my breasts weren't tender anymore. I wasn't nauseous anymore. I wasn't hungry anymore. And that was weird to
me. Yeah, that was a flag, like a sign that something was maybe, you know, it's your first time too, though. So it's like, is this normal? Is this just like a few days and it's going to go back to what I was feeling?
And so that was kind of a first signal to me. And the doctors decided, you know, okay, we want to do some more testing. And the night before I went in, I couldn't sleep, of course. And I remember getting up and going out onto the couch in the living room and lying there. And although we're deeply spiritual, I'm not necessarily someone who actively prays. And I laid down on the couch and I put my hands on my body and I just said to her, and we knew it was a girl, I said, please tell me, you know, please tell me what the answer is here, because I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's right for you.
I love that.
And I'm putting my trust in you in a way to please communicate to me what the answer is.
Right.
And we went in the next day and they did another ultrasound. And I could see the doctor who was doing it, there was something in his face that changed, and I wasn't even looking at the screen. I was just watching his face, and I knew right away.
Wow.
And he asked if there was another woman who we had touched in with, if she was there, and she wasn't. And he turned and told us, you know, I'm not finding a heartbeat.
Okay.
And I knew right away that I could tell. And in
it synced up with what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm. And
so interesting.
He, you know, said how sorry he was and gave us some space. And on the one hand, devastated, you know, they walked out of the room and we cried and we grieved that. But on the other hand, there was also a sense of relief.
No, having an answer, knowing what was happening.
And also a deeper experience, which is that life knows what to do.
Right.
So when there is a pregnancy loss, I think one of the things that's really important for us to remember is that there's a wisdom to life. And if there is something that's happening with that life that's growing inside of us that says it's not going to be viable or as healthy as it could be or as successful as it could be, that as hard as it is to let go and experience that loss, to also have trust that there is a bigger wisdom to the universe and to the world, and we can't always know why or what the answers are. But I did take heed in that, and I felt like the prayer that I had done the night before in some way was answered, and she answered it for me so that I wouldn't have to make some hard or devastating decision about do I keep a pregnancy or do I terminate a pregnancy? And that's not a position I wanted to be in. And I felt like she answered and said, you know what, this is the wisest thing for me.
Right. What happened following that?
So we, that was the day that then we went on the hike. And
do they just send you, I mean,
they just sent us home that day, okay. Which is
right.
A bizarre interesting and something experience.
I wasn't sure happened.
Yeah.
And after you get news like that, what does happen?
Why it's important, I think, to talk about, because there are people who experience pregnancy loss and the body vacates that pregnancy naturally
Before you even sometimes get a chance to go see a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Right. And people will have that experience, and that didn't happen for me, and it wasn't happening for me. And so we waited almost another week, and then I did have to go in and they had to take care of it within the doctor's office. And I think that, you know, coming out of that, what was so challenging was that no one talked to me about the recovery after that.
Right.
My doctor was amazing and so wonderful and so caring and thorough, but my period didn't come back for 90 days.
Right.
And that's a long time when you are ready to be a mother and you're ready to be pregnant and you're ready to have a baby.
Yes.
You think, okay, it'll come back.
My body will come back to normal. Everything will click in after this. But that's a long time.
It's a long time. And they say, like, okay, wait till you have one cycle and then start trying again. So those first 30 days passed. And I was like, okay.
And were they uncomfortable? Or did the 30 days following the miscarriage?
No.
Okay.
Not at all. I mean, it was complete, like, the next day.
Like, your body was like, I'm back to normal, back to
100%. I felt
that's very interesting too.
Physically great.
How durable the body is, mm-hmm. like how it's able to, you know, go right back into its state it was in.
Yeah.
I should say pliable and durable, because it is both, but yeah.
I felt fantastic. And physically, there were no ramifications, no aftermath of that. I was right back to being able to do whatever it was I wanted to do from a physical perspective.
What about emotionally? Because
the emotional part that was hard was that I was ready to start trying again. I was ready to be pregnant again. And I was ready to wait those 30 days until my cycle came back.
Was it even harder to wait because you knew how ready you were and how much you wanted this?
100%. And as much as for myself, I'm a longtime meditator. And that's a deep part of my daily practice, and I'm steeped in self-compassion and holding things lightly, and it was very hard to hold this lightly.
Right.
Those 30 days would pass and nothing would come, and then 30 more days would pass and nothing would come, and, you know, 30 more days. And I thought once it finally did come that it would take a while to get pregnant again.
Sure. Yes, that's what I would think too, because the body's now getting back into its, you know, cycle and things are regulating.
And the reality is, it was actually really, this is such a silly story, but I'll share it because I think there are probably a lot of women who would appreciate it. I was at my best friend's house and we were sitting and we were talking and I had to go to the bathroom, and out of nowhere, my cycle came back and I screamed in the bathroom, and then she's screaming outside the bathroom. She said, "Does that mean what I think it means? Hold on. And, you know, she was running upstairs and getting me what I needed.
Oh, yeah.
And she said, "I don't think I've ever been so excited for someone to have their period in their life." And it was so celebratory and so
joyful.
Fun and joyful. And she has a daughter, and she was like, "I don't think I'll be this excited when she has her period." So that was really powerful and really special to share. But then we got pregnant right away.
Yes, because you had your miscarriage in February,
mm-hmm.
and you are now how many months pregnant?
So I'm almost 6 months
almost
pregnant.
Almost 6 months. Yeah. That's amazing. You are right in the second trimester.
Yes, right in the middle. And we're due again in February, which is such a beautiful coming full circle, and with another little girl. And so it really feels beautiful.
Very meant.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's awesome. Very meant. And do you think there is this tie with the universe or a bigger realm that you, do you ever connect with or talk to your lost one? Or is that?
That was a big part in having my cycle come back, actually, which was that, you know, in calling in that first little spirit, what I had really called in was this desire for a teacher. You know, I saw motherhood as an opportunity to receive very deep teachings. And in my heart and in my mind, I'd been calling in a teacher and a wise spirit and an old spirit. And I think I had been so attached to that that part of what had to happen for me was letting that go. And once I really let that go and said, okay, whoever that spirit was that I called in has moved on and did teach her lessons, but now she's gone and now it's time to let that go and call someone new in, then everything came back online.
Wow, that is so beautiful and so big and such an awareness that you had to see that and know that and know yourself.
And I had support in that. I was working, you know, with some people who were mentors and coaches and other women who helped to point me to that.
Mm-hmm. And to get there.
Yeah, to get there. And then to really also realize, you know, with this new life that I wanted to call in, I'm not putting that pressure on her. You know? She can be however old she is in her soul and, you know, whatever kind of teacher.
Even though it was like good pressure and all positive, wonderful things, it's such a great way to look at it and to learn about ourselves more, about what we're trying to like control and hold on to.
And that same friend turned to me and said, who I was there with on that day that we celebrated, she said, you know, it seems to me that that little soul that you called in did do all of that and had given its teachings and was a great teacher and its lesson was complete.
Mm-hmm. And she made room for the next little soul.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do to get through this? Like, what did you, because this is, it is still a loss. It's something we don't talk a whole lot about in our society and in culture. What helped you to get through this?
Definitely having the support of my partner, and I feel very lucky to have such a supportive partner. And he at first saying, you know, okay, we're not gonna go and talk about this right away.
And what did that do for you? And because you said your impulse was to, okay, let's get going, let's start again, let's just go.
It gave me the permission to take, I took at least a week off of work and to really slow down and heal my body. And that looked like deep self-care. And it was hot baths and it was good food and it was time on the couch cuddling and at times crying and having us go through the grieving process we needed to go through together. It was allowing my friends to be there or allowing my mom to be there and accepting that support, but having the time off and going back to my practices, going back to meditation, going back to yoga, and then nourishing myself in all the ways that I was needing to be nourished at that time.
That's so important, I think, to have people around you that remind you to do that sometimes, because it's so hard. It's hard to see past the forest through the trees when you're in it. And it's like, I need someone to help pull me out. So many people don't have maybe that support. What would you say to help them get through those hard times?
There's a famous saying that says human beings are the only animals that, when lost, keep running faster in the wrong direction. And that, I think, is part of our culture, especially here in the U.S., where there is such a fast pace that we're living at and such an urgency that undercurrents everything, that whether we are in partnership or we are alone, the more that we are willing to slow down and deeply listen, the more that I think we'll be able to call in whatever that support is that we're needing moment to moment. But when we go back into the urgency and the doing and the full schedule and the full heart and the full mind and the full day, we're not deeply listening. We're not in relational mindfulness and we're not in relationship to our hearts and our minds' deepest needs. So I think the biggest piece of advice that I would give to somebody is slow down.
How has meditation helped you through this? And have you been doing it through this time?
Absolutely. It's a daily part of my practice and probably the most consistent part of my spiritual practice.
Because I know you also teach it.
Yeah. The biggest thing, you know, to be in a state of meditation is to be in each moment exactly as it is, free of judgment. And if I can be with myself in the attachment to when are my hormones going to come back online, and to just be with that. You know, I was actually on a 10-day meditation retreat while I was in the midst of this with one of my great mentors and teachers. And I would go into the one-on-one sessions with her and laugh and say, you know, I'm like one of those little crank-up toys that's been cranked up and it's, yes. It's against the wall and it has nowhere to go.
And it keeps just hitting keeps that wall. Hitting the wall.
And so I could really see that. And the beautiful thing about being able to see that part of myself was that I could laugh about it.
And absolutely.
Not laughing at myself, no. But I could have this sense of humor as to where my mind kept going. And in that awareness, then there gets to be compassion.
Yes.
Then I get to put a hand over my heart and say, oh, wow, you know, this is really hard right now. Wow, I see that you're really wanting these other things to be happening. You're really wanting to be pregnant again. You're really wanting. And that's okay. And then to rise up from that place of mindful awareness and into a place of compassion is the way that this practice has helped me the most.
I love that you just said, and that's okay. That's okay that I want these things. And I accept that. And it's not fighting yourself on it saying, well, you know, the self-judgment, why do you want this? And why can't you wait? But okay, it's okay.
And this
That's a great place to start healing, I think, for anybody, too, because we're usually in that space when we need to get through something.
Yeah. And in the Buddhist teachings, it's what we call the second arrow. The first arrow is the pregnancy loss. That happened. That's the first arrow. It's hard. It's painful. Mm-hmm. But the second arrow is then when we go, I'm a bad person. There's something wrong with me. I'll never get pregnant again. This means that every pregnancy is going to end in a loss. Those arrows cause us, that's where suffering really comes from. Because the reality is we're all going to die. We're all going to get sick. We're all going to lose people. We're all going to face hardship.
There's a lot of suffering in this world. That's a reality.
In being human. I mean, that's the first noble truth. And yes. It's translated as life is suffering. And that's not a great translation
right.
of it. But life is hard. I mean, look at the way we come into this world. It's messy and it's bloody and painful. So, of course, your incarnation is going to be that. But we can have skills and strategies so that we don't make it more painful than it actually needs to be.
I think a lot of people who go through this too do have that self-judgment and self-blame that can go hand in hand with the mourning and grieving. And then I think it can snowball into like depression and things, right? So we can go into this depression state and then we still want to have a baby. And if it's not happening, we get, it's just, it bubbles up and bubbles over. What can you say from your experience to other people that have like, haven't reached that, haven't gotten over the peak yet? They're still stuck. They may feel stuck in that self-blame, self-judgment, kind of teetering down rather than saying, okay, this happened, I'm going to keep going. But now they're like stuck.
I think a big part of that journey for me was the awakening to how common this is, which I knew people who had navigated pregnancy loss, but I did not know that it was one in four pregnancies.
Right. Every woman I've spoken to has happened to her or she knows somebody that it has happened to.
I know more people who have navigated pregnancy loss than who haven't and have children.
Yes, same.
And I know I know several women who have children and have never had loss, but I know more who have experienced loss than who haven't. And of course, we're at a point in time scientifically where we're able to know that we're pregnant much earlier.
Very true.
And we wouldn't have known that we were even experiencing a pregnancy loss many, many decades ago. So we're more aware of it. We're more tuned into it. So I think that first piece really would come from the practices of self-compassion. And these are really rooted in the work of Kristen Neff and Christopher Gerber, which say that I'm not alone. And that's that putting the hand over the heart. This is a hard moment. I'm not alone in this. And that's that first step of moving away from shame and self-blame. And then from there, when people are in that place, it is important that if we need help, that we ask for help. And it might not be from your friends and your family, if they're emotionally caught up in it themselves, that we seek out support, whether that's from a therapist or it's a mentor or it's a teacher. And then I think for us as women or pregnant people who have navigated a pregnancy loss, to be unafraid to then share these stories. I had a student who recently, she herself had navigated a loss, and she was a pretty new student, and I didn't think that she knew about my loss, and I went out of my way to make sure and tell her and to say, I really want you to know that I navigated this year as well, and if you have any questions, if you want to talk about it, I'm available, and you're not the only one going through this. And I could see this wash over her face just in this brief conversation. Everything lightened, and just for her to look and say, thank you, because she did feel alone.
Yes. And I think, too, if we don't share it, or if that's a choice we want to make where we just don't feel comfortable sharing it, I think you can, that can really just build up inside, and that can be a heavy weight to carry. I think reaching out is one of the best ways, right, to help each other.
And yet that and can feel hard, you know, it because can. Then you have to open yourself
and you're
up
putting
to
yourself
feeling
out
those
there.
Things.
Yeah. And then what the reaction and response is going to be. Why do you think it's so taboo in our culture? Like, why do you think it's something we don't make time to, like, sit down and share and talk about?
It's such a powerful question. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like we do live in a private culture these days, and we don't have the kinds of homes and communities where our doors are open. Now that I'm headed into being a mother, my best friend again, she said to me, she's got two young kids, and she said to me, you know, one thing, because I was asking her if you could reflect on and do something different in your postpartum phase, because I'm trying to think about what
thinking
kind of
ahead.
Support that I need.
Yes.
And she said, at the time, it wouldn't have occurred to me, but I wish that I had opened myself up to telling you or someone else, my door is open, come over anytime, every day. And if it's not the right day and I don't want you there, then I can say, okay, go away.
Right.
But
now's not a good time.
I wish that I had an open door policy. And we just don't have that as a culture anymore. We're not coming into each other's homes in this way. And I think that lack of a real felt sense of community prevents us then from sharing potentially on this deeper level about these more sensitive emotional or vulnerable topics and experiences.
That's so interesting you bring that up, because I have a girlfriend who has a child who's about 2 now, and she has extensively researched the power of the tribe and what that's like. And it sounds very similar to what you're saying with community. It's the same thing, community, tribe. We have lost that lifestyle in a sense. And it's almost like such an effort and so hard to create it. And in that, there's been like the breakdown of, you know, the family and so many, you know, such a domino effect of other things. I think it's so important that you just brought that up, and that we try to create that even just within ourselves, and that your girlfriend offered that to you. Like, we think sometimes people just know as well, oh, they know they can stop by. But when someone actually verbalizes that and says, hey, stop by anytime, come by, if you need anything, I'm here. If we have people in our lives, it makes opening up, I think, so much easier, and knowing that we're not you know, by herself crying in the shower mm-hmm. because things are just overwhelming.
And I think too, like, as we now go into this phase where women are having children at an older age, mm-hmm. you know, I only have one girlfriend my age who's had a child. My other friends were 42 and 38 when they had their kids. And so I think we also don't talk about this loss of pregnancy because there is something in the back of our heads that say, I waited too long. I should have done this sooner. My eggs are bad.
Definitely.
If you're in a medical model of care as a woman in pregnancy and you're over the age of 35, they call you a geriatric pregnancy. And that's horrifying.
I read that recently too. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, over 35 years old. Biologically speaking, that's what they...
You're geriatric.
Yes.
And that's a horrible thing to say. And there's right. so much of the way that we phrase things in terms even of labor and delivery that mm-hmm. there's this way of saying, oh, if you're in labor, failure to progress. So you're a failure in some way mm-hmm. that you're failing to dilate. You know, and the words that we use around this, they have a lot of blame.
Yes.
We don't call erectile dysfunction failure to perform. But we do this to women. Mm-hmm. And the way that we talk about women specifically in terms of OBGYN care in that medical model, if you really listen to the words that are used, they have a very negative self-blaming tone. And it becomes our responsibility, I think, as activists and women in this era now of Me Too and standing up for mm-hmm. our rights and asking for consent in terms of care, that we're really seeking out professionals who don't speak this way. I'm working with a midwifery group, and it will still be a hospital delivery, but we are under full midwifery care. They've never once used the term geriatric pregnancy with me.
Right.
And if we're yeah. being put into this model of being blamed and, you know, failure to progress, geriatric pregnancy, no wonder we wouldn't talk about it with each other because blamed by the model.
Right. It's been conditioning. And I think that's even why people don't discuss a lot of times the loss of their pregnancy or miscarriage. There is that, like, I must have done something mm-hmm. wrong. It must have been me, my fault. And I don't want to share that. I my hope and prayer is that we live in a society that eventually, you know, celebrates talking about their pains. And I don't mean that in like a morbid way. I mean that in like a united, unified, like we're here for each other and that's okay way. You said that you're 6 months pregnant now
mm-hmm.
and second trimester. How has it been for you now being pregnant and feeling all the joys and celebrations of this new little life, but also knowing the life that is not here anymore? Are there mixed emotions with that?
Oh my God, yeah. It's okay. been a journey and it hasn't been easy. I've had a wonderful pregnancy, but I hit week 12 in this pregnancy and all of my symptoms went away again. And that was terrifying. Mm-hmm. We had had our 12-week ultrasound. We had had blood tests. Everything looked good. But then all my symptoms went away and I was very worried. And I called the midwives and they were so amazing. So for anybody who's based in LA, I'm working with the UCLA midwives and I can't promote them enough and encourage people to check it out as an alternative to the medical model.
That is so awesome that people can listen and have that as a reference now to turn to and make an appointment or look up.
Yeah,
so great.
They do info sessions and go check it out because it's fantastic. But right away, they got me in that day. They were so soothing and so supportive. And we listened to her heartbeat and we saw that she was okay, or listened to hear that she was okay. And that was really important. But that hasn't really gone away, truthfully, that there is an undercurrent of being concerned that something could happen again, or being mm-hmm. concerned that as much as I trust that she is strong and she's okay
yes.
and she's doing great, that my body could hurt her. And mm-hmm. that was really brought to the forefront for me when I was 5 weeks pregnant in this pregnancy. I ended up in the ER at 2 o'clock in the morning.
With this pregnancy?
With this pregnancy. And I was in severe pain. My body was shaking. I was vomiting. I thought I had kidney stones.
Yes.
And they couldn't do anything. They couldn't medicate me, obviously, because I knew that I was pregnant. And so right. finally they did an ultrasound and they saw that I had a severe kidney infection.
Oh my gosh.
And after 8 hours of continuous horrible pain in the ER, the doctor came in, explained what was going on and what we would do from there. But he also said, look, before you leave, I need to let you know that the heart rate is low. And to us, that signals an impending pregnancy loss.
Oh my gosh.
And so it goes back to what we'd kind of started this conversation with, was the first time around, I did everything right. I did it all right. And then this pregnancy started. And it was like, oh my God, all the things I didn't want to have happen are happening. And that was terrifying. And so to start it off that way was really...
I can't even imagine. Here you are in your head. Were you thinking, here I am again?
Yes. Oh yeah. And I thought I had all the thoughts that come along with that of, I can't do this again, or I don't want to do this again. And then I'd have the thought, I can't do this again, and go right into that place of, I really believe that I can face anything that I am handed and learn and grow from it. As much as I wouldn't want to navigate this again, I know that there's a reservoir inside of me of mm-hmm. strength and ability, but it was very hard. And so the whole pregnancy, in some way, I've had so much joy and I feel so good and energized and strong and really just a positive experience. But the undercurrent of that is something wrong. Mm-hmm. So every time we go in and they put the Doppler on and listen to her heartbeat, it's like a huge hallelujah celebration. But it has been a place where my meditation practice, my mindfulness practice, has had to rise up to meet me okay. every single day, and to say to that part of myself yeah. that's concerned or worried, I see you. I see that you're worried. I see that you're afraid, and it's okay.
Yeah. You look amazing, by the way. Thank you. Need to say this because not everybody does. And I know you can't see on the podcast. And I love, I read one of your posts because I do love reading your posts mm-hmm. and through social media. And you said something, and I love that you brought this up and I wanted to mention it. Women, we get pregnant, and I think the misnomer is we need to like stop doing things. We need to like stop like doing just, you know, daily activities in our regular daily routine, let's say. You don't look like you have. You look so healthy and so, you know, viable and active. What do you think on the topic? What would you say?
I haven't changed anything, truthfully. You know, I strength train twice a week, and that's done very consciously with someone who obviously from the very beginning knew that I was pregnant both times around.
Right.
But I'm
super aware and conscientious.
Still strength training twice a week, still going on hikes. I don't run anymore. That doesn't feel right for me in my body. For some women it does. That just doesn't feel comfortable for me.
Right. Listening to your body.
But I will still get some cardiovascular work in there, still doing lots of yoga. But what one of the recent studies showed was that pregnant women reach the peak of energy output for human capacity to the level of elite endurance athletes.
Wow.
And not just marathon runners, but we're talking long distance endurance runners. And so if that's the kind of energy that's required of us at the maximum of human energy capacity, now is not the time to stop using your body.
Right.
Now is not the time. Unless you're very sick or your energy is low, we need to honor that and and back off and take care of ourselves. But you're about to enter into one of the biggest feats of all time.
So true.
And as you go through labor and delivery and then the postpartum phase, we really want to make sure that we have those resources and those skills. So now, even although my strength training has changed in many ways, it's really good for me to be doing things that I don't want to be doing. And I'll be doing something and I'll look at him and I'm like, I don't want to be doing this right now. And I know that when a contraction comes, I will have no choice but to get through it to the other side. And I see it all as training for that time. So I think it is important that women stay strong. And I know people have good intentions. They'll say, oh, don't pick that up. And it comes from a good place. But really, we need to still be picking up heavy things or carrying something and keeping those skills in our bodies.
Right. And being a mom of two, I totally agree. It can be, as you start getting bigger, it can be harder to maybe literally grab that thing on the floor. But I think we have to keep moving and know, like, again, when the contraction comes or our, you know, baby needs to be picked up to be fed, we need to be able to do all of those things and to feel okay and good doing it too. That was another thing I wanted to talk to you about. What are some of your reflections that you've had since being where you're at today at 6 months pregnant, as far as reflections of pregnancy and reflections of experiencing it the first time around and experiencing it now?
I think a big part for me has been appreciating the small moments. I have two stepchildren, so I've got a 14-year-old stepdaughter and an 8-year-old stepson. And we didn't tell them the first time around because it wasn't far enough along in the pregnancy to have told them. But risking that moment at 16 weeks when it was like, okay, we're not going to be able to hide this much longer.
Yes, right.
And we know things are okay. And it's time to start sharing. And we told them, and really allowing myself to especially appreciate that time with my stepson, who is so excited. He's wanted a little sibling for so long. And even last night, I was laying on the couch, and she'll get kind of active at night. And it was the first time where I said, okay, do you want to come and try to feel her? And I put his little hands on my body, and I put my hands over his hands, and I had my husband play a crystal bowl because she'll respond when we do that. And so he played it a bunch. And then for the first time, he got to feel little taps into his hand. And it's super subtle right now. It's not big. But I think allowing myself to really appreciate those moments has been important. But the biggest reflection of all is the teaching that we are not in control, and that is part of parenting, that we can do everything right. We can read all the books. We can have all the conversations. And at the end of the day, there are aspects of this journey that they're going to take us for a ride.
Yes.
And can we be open to that and receptive to that? And at the end of the day, you know, what kind of life do we want to live? And I want to be there for all of it, not just the things that are really good, but also the things that are really hard, and how that in some way has brought all of us closer together, the wider community, my husband, and also then the deeper appreciation now, even more so of this new life that will come forward.
Why do you think it's important that we share these things and talk about them? And specifically women share these topics that we're talking about with each other.
Secrets don't build trust or community. When we hold things in, we create isolation. And at the end of the day, life is about connection. Life is about that felt sense. What do they say that a lone monkey is a dead monkey? And that's true for us. You know, people that isolate themselves and keep their stories to themselves, there is a greater sense of suffering. It's not to say, you know, we don't have to share everything. It's, you know, we're also in this phase where there's sort of a societal sharing free for all.
It's weird. We're like in a huge private this phase where it's like what you said, the tribe isn't really present as it was and as it used to be. So we're like in this private world, but we're also now in this like overly sharing world too, of like selective sharing. It's very interesting.
Well, and that's why it is important to have the select people with whom you do share the big things. I don't necessarily, you know, if I wasn't a public figure who was teaching a wider population, I don't know that I would have gone out of my way to put this on social media.
Right.
But I felt a different responsibility. So I think more than anything, for most people out there, it is to have those few people who are at the center of your circle of trust,
yeah.
and that sharing happens. That feels yeah. really important, I think, for us as humans.
Safe people, whoever those people are, mm-hmm. your friends, your family, people you work with. But I think just it's not just you healing, it's them also healing too by receiving that information. I also wanted to ask, are your kidneys okay?
Yeah.
What happened? Oh my goodness. And was this just a coincidence or is this something that's been an ongoing issue with you?
No, it came out of nowhere, really.
You're kidding.
No. Yeah. So I think it was, you know, I'm not sure what it was, but it came out of nowhere. It got resolved.
At 5 weeks pregnant.
Mm-hmm. And it got resolved and now we're fine. It's fine.
That's amazing to me. You look great.
Thank you.
I am so thankful you came in to give us some time and talk about this topic. Is there anything else you would like to mention or say that we have not covered? I feel like there was so much.
No, I feel like we've been really, really thorough. And it goes back to the importance of this conversation is the reminder that if somebody is out there and they're listening and they're wanting to get pregnant and haven't been pregnant yet, or they're not sure if they want to have kids. I mean, that's a big conversation for me and in my community with so many of my friends and my students, or they're navigating pregnancy loss, to really remember, whatever the case is, that there is a bigger community out there and that you're not alone. And that's what I hope the biggest takeaway is from any time we share conversations like this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We can be